Good afternoon, folks. Just before we get started, you will have seen who's on the panel here this afternoon. I will introduce them to you after a short presentation. I'm of the view that the world music album, and the album especially, is dead. I'm sad about this fact, and I was looking for a reason for this, and this particular slide reminds me. It's sort of what happened to world music, but it's happened to the album, and that is that we've failed as an industry, and I say not specifically the world music industry, but the music industry generally, we've failed to react to the changes in technology. Why this is so has, I think, something to do with the decision makers who were in positions to do something about it when things started to change. They were simply too unhip, too old to respond to what happened to the arrival of the internet. So what we have today, or why we have a problem with the album generally, is simply, I think, down to that fact. I'm not the only one that thinks that the album is dead, or the world music album is dead. This gentleman, who's the leader of the singer of The Who, Daltrey, recently put this statement out. And what was interesting is, you'll see here, he says, why should he make albums for other people to have his music for nothing? And I think that's a pretty solid argument. I'm hoping that some of the people on the stage will tell us later that it's not for nothing, but I have seen the accounts, and I'm afraid that certainly for specialist repertoire, the checks are not really that large. Independent labels are the bridge between indigenous cultural content and global markets, while still maintaining the integrity and authenticity of differing traditions. It was the introduction to an interesting report which appeared earlier this year, and this little graphic here I found particularly interesting because it shows what percentage of the music industry belongs or is owned by independent labels. And perhaps the most interesting thing is what's not here, and that is what's owned by the majors, the people who make the decisions about this industry that we're in. And they only have 60%, according to this graphic. We, as the music, world music, jazz, blues, and other indie repertoire, represent actually as much as 40% of the music industry. The majors, who have lots of influence on IFPI, feel slightly differently. They are very happy with the fact that they're in control of these things. And what they have done for the first time, they've realized that digital music has overtaken physical music. And I was a little amazed by this fact. And I saw this graphic in the same report. And all of these guys who are in decision-making positions are very happy that the turnover's gone up. The turnover may have gone up, but I think the sad thing for certainly for world music repertoire, for specialist repertoire, lies in the bottom left-hand corner here, and that is that physical sales are down, and downloads are down, which scares me a bit, because when albums started to lose traction in the industry, at least we were getting something out of downloads. This made me most sad, and I think for me this is the death certificate of the album, and certainly the death certificate of the world music album. This gentleman, who knows, I think, a thing or two about our industry, has picked up this little graphic which put into a blog, which he did. And I think he's right. Not only are we in trouble, but as artists, the people that we serve as labels are in trouble. Viable careers are being destroyed, according to this man, by streaming. Whether or not this is true, I hope the people on the stage will tell me that it's not the case, but I am afraid that I think it is true. And here's why. This is a split of what you get from Spotify. If you have a $10 deal, it comes out like this. In the end, about half of it gets to the label, and the artist gets about, according to this thing, 68 cents. I don't think that this is a very attractive business model, especially when it costs. This is an old study. What does it cost to make a song? Actually, it should be what does it cost to make an album. It's a couple of years old, but it was an interesting study which was done. And in the end, it's about $10,000 to make a respectable album. And if you're getting such a small slice of the pie, then you really have to be moving quite a few downloads, quite a few streams. And as far as I know, certainly World Music Repertoire is not really very well supported on streaming. Earlier this year, there was a bit of a scare, and I mentioned this in reference to the download issue, that Apple was going to stop downloads. And I was scared by it too, because, as I said, downloads are still okay, but streaming was really problematic for me. And Bandcamp put this press release out. They said, no, we're selling tons of albums. I think the figure that they put is 25,000. What is it? Anyway, they're saying that they're selling large numbers of vinyl, especially. And I'm a bit cynical about this, because I think this is selling fan material. This is not selling albums. People who go to Bandcamp are fans, and they're not looking for new releases. They're looking for stuff that they haven't got as collectors. So, Billboard had an interesting story a little while back, and it not only indicated that producers were in trouble, but also that music publishers were in trouble. And I'm a music publisher, and that's where I come from. And I plow a lot of what I get as a music publisher into album production, into new artists, into signings for the labels that I'm associated with. And as you saw from the split earlier, allegedly about a dollar of the $10 comes to music publishers. And I say allegedly because I don't, as a music publisher, especially from America, from the US, don't see a lot of publishing revenue from streaming. This is a provocative slide. It was doing the rounds on social media earlier. It indicated, as a songwriter, what kind of streaming support you have to get to make a living of any kind. And 288 million spins would equal the Spotify average salary. I did actually try to find out what the average salary of the Spotify people was, but I didn't believe it. It was allegedly $160,000 a year, which I thought that was a pretty good thing, pretty good job. But anyway, it's just bizarre. For me, it's totally bizarre. And finally, we not only have the threat of getting peanuts, as it were, out of streaming, but now we have a situation where content online like YouTube can be ripped. So I think this is a bit of a startling realization for people in my position. And suddenly I said, well, hang on, I'm knocking the streaming guys, I'm knocking the downloading guys, but at least we're getting something out of it. But I think that this area especially needs to be controlled. I think we as content holders have to be very careful what we put online, because it's getting ripped. And that is not any kind of business model. So, I want to start then by introducing Carolina. And Carolina, I invited to come onto the panel because she's, as it were, new in record production, a couple of years, and she's still unjaded by the experiences or disappointments of the industry. And I'd like to ask Carolina, do you think that the world music album and the album are dead?
Well, in my opinion, it's not dead, but it's totally different than it was in our youth. And it's probably dead in a matter of direct business. I think it's not like a way to make money at all. It's a way to present the artist and to give a souvenir to the audience, and also to make a little extra buck on the side. I saw Pat Metheny, he sold like 200 albums at a concert, and he was actually happy selling it and himself. Now, I'm also a publisher, and I do that only to support the musician. So the musicians that I work with, if we have some good material, I work in close collaboration with the studio. We actually do it to lift the whole thing up. So I never saw it as a business by itself for what I'm doing. It was just part of the packet of presenting the music, and then also as a feinschmecker loving music and loving to be in the studio and to be creative in that part and to follow the process. That was one of the reasons that we do it, because even the studio does not make money when we are working. We do it for the love of the music. So it's really naive when I'm sitting with the big cats here in that sense.
Thank you. We'll have an opportunity a little later to take some questions from the floor, so please make some notes. We'd really love to hear what you have to say. I'd like now to introduce Ninda Johal. Ninda is a former artist who I think in his own words, he saw the light after 10 years of the fight. Ninda, is there a future for the world music album?
When I first entered the music industry, we sold CDs. We sold vinyl. And some of you may remember we sold something called a cassette. Now, 20 years on, you don't see any of those products. Despite that, I am still doing thinkable. I still produced a CD. Still got some here. So the question is, why did I do that? I think you have to start from understanding your customer. And I think what the music industry failed to do was follow the customer. So we said to the customer, we make our songs this many, by the way. We make them in this format, by the way. And if you want it, you're going to have to come to us to get it. And we're going to sell it to you when we want to sell it to you. And we're going to sell it to you in which format we think we're going to sell it to you. The customer decided, once digital came on board, they didn't want to listen to me. They wanted to buy their tracks when they wanted, which could be 4 o'clock in the morning. They didn't want to buy all the tracks. They would buy the tracks they wanted, whenever they wanted, at what price they wanted. So the music industry, as Patrick said, couldn't cope with the consumer telling us what they wanted to do. So the industry started suing everyone, including 88-year-olds sitting in their bedroom trying to download what was believed to be an illegal download, from 88-year-olds to 14-year-olds. So the music industry started to sue its own customers, because that was the only way they thought they could fight back, because they couldn't understand why the consumer was telling us that they didn't want it in this format. So where does the album go now? So if we accept that consumers want to digest music in the form they want, when they want, and to be able to take it in any format, whether it's streaming or downloads. Where do we go? Well, we have to follow the customer. We have to follow the customer. I discovered in my genre of music, which is Bhangra, which is Asian dance music, is that we were selling to 14 to 20-year-olds. They decided that they were just about prepared to pay 79p for a track, just about. And most of them thought that was too much. And most of them were illegally downloading. So our ad industry has now knocked this on the head. We don't do albums anymore at all. We sell singles. And the rationale behind that is, if I take you to an 18-year-old now, you sit in front of an 18-year-old, you'll be lucky to keep their attention for more than 5 minutes. I'll be amazed if they haven't looked at their phone within 5 minutes of talking to you. They have the attention span of a fish. And if you think they're going to sit there, and if you think they're going to sit there and go through that many tracks, I would ask you to be locked up and put in an asylum. They're not going to do it. They're not going to listen to this many tracks. We have a societal change. We have a technological change. And we as an industry have to understand our customers. So my final comment, why have I done an album then, despite saying all that? Because currently, my customer currently is happy to listen to 10 tracks. And I was shocked. I was saying to Scott, I bought myself a new car recently, Friday. And I was stunned that this BMW had a CD player. I was stunned. That tells me the manufacturer BMW realises their customer is probably 40, 50-year-olds and is probably still listening to a CD. The future is your 20, 15, 20, 30-year-old will no longer have the attention span to listen to a CD. The music CD album is dead.
I'm afraid I agree with you. I would like now to introduce Scott to you. Scott is a gentleman I've had contact with for over 10 years, and when I've got a question or a problem when it comes to the digital game, I call him, and he was reminding me that he was walking through a park in Eastern Europe somewhere, and he had to field a call from me. But anyway, Scott, I've put up a couple of provocative slides. Tell me I'm wrong.
Well, you're not wrong about everything. can I say we're friends? We're certainly colleagues, but you are wrong. You're wrong about... The only thing you're right about is the album is dead. So if anyone thinks it isn't, then you're either sadly misinformed or living in a bubble of dreaming of what you'd like the world to be. Then if I went through every one of your slides, I think every one of them was either inaccurate or completely, I mean, just we could sit here for hours. I could just go through each one and tell you why they were wrong. Sorry. I don't mean to be so opinionated, but you asked me to come on here and then, well, I'll be opinionated. First of all, the music industry was not slow to react to technology, and they were the first business. I mean, I've been in the music business well over 25 years. I started doing my first online campaigns for music in 1995. The music industry was licensing services in the late 90s. There wasn't a digital industry. It was the technology and the people weren't there yet. We needed things like smartphones and Wi-Fi networks for everything to catch up. And you would be silly if you were in the business in 1999 to say, I've seen the future, it's all digital, so let's stop selling CDs today, because there was no reason to do that until the market caught up with them. So I didn't see that. To say that there's no more music industry left is crazy. I think the music industry is healthier in 2016 than it's been maybe ever. This is a great industry to be in. And if you don't believe it, look at the top artists. They might not be world music artists, but were they ever world music artists, the top artists? I would say the top artists and labels are doing better today than ever before. If you don't believe it, look at the lifestyle of One Direction, Rihanna, Justin Bieber, all your favorites, right? But whoever was the top artist in, you know, year 2000, 95, 55, I mean, I went to visit, Graceland, Elvis Presley's house. And, you know, big house, but I remember being out there and going, not that much bigger than my parents' house. My parents aren't that rich. They're middle class. But take a look at, you know, where a superstar today lives and how they travel. And trust me, they are doing exponentially better than anyone in the music industry has ever done. There's more money to be had. In terms of that crazy slide, the one that said 288 million streams to make money, nonsense. Don't look at that shit. This is the problem with our industry is artists that used to be famous and are struggling to make it today get publicity because they make a statement. When really the problem isn't that they can't make money, it's that they haven't had a hit in 30 years. Seriously, that's their problem. And the other problem is you have unsigned artists that aren't even in the music industry trying to figure out what is going on. So this is one that just really bothers me. Sorry, and then you'll just cut me off when you're ready to just say stop and just go to the next person. You, even in the middle of a sentence, you can just cut me off. Because that's the way these things work. You just push my button. So I was saying, so people that don't even know how the music industry works decide that they're going to do some math. And guess what? They're not mathematicians either. So they don't really know anything, but they put this out here and it gets coverage because I saw this printed everywhere. The idea is, we spoke about this earlier, you have to know which math to do, right? So if you wanted to know how fast is a car going, you know, you go out on the highway and you see a car going, you go, how fast is it going? Well, you could put it on a scale and weigh it, and you would get an accurate measurement. It would say, oh, it's 2,500 pounds. That's how much the car weighs. Accurate measurement. If you look at it, your statement from a streaming service, and it says you earned X amount of money, divide through by the number of streams, you would get an accurate number, except you're just using the wrong math. If you want to know how fast a car is going, you don't weigh it, even though it's accurate. You check its velocity. And if you want to know how much you make on streaming services, you don't divide through the amount of money you made by the number of tracks played, because it gives you a false number. It's the wrong number. The only thing that matters is how you did in relation to everybody else and what's the size of the pie. So if Spotify was paying out $2 billion a year, which it is, an enormous number, because in that other slide you show they pay out 80% of their revenue, right? If that number is $100 billion or $1 trillion, that's what matters. How big is the pie? And then how well you did in relationship to everyone else. So let's say there's a pie of $1 billion, and there's 1 million people streaming it, right? But then it's how many streams do they do? You could actually, people could stream a lot of music this month, and for whatever reason, next month streams are down, right? You could still make more money. Even though your number of streams is down, it's because if you last month had your song streamed 100,000 times and I had it 50,000 times, but the following month, your song was only streamed 50,000 times and mine was streamed 40,000 times. So we both went down. You went in half. I only went down by 10,000. I'll still make more money because it's a pro rata share of the pie and they're paying out 80% of it. So that just on the figures, I mean, we'll get back to the albums, Dad, but sorry. Sorry for my rant, but there's money there.
Thanks, Scott. Thanks. I think that indicates an interesting problem for me, and that is that the streaming industry is exceptionally
untransparent. What is happening out there, especially in this case, is this publisher revenue. You have a situation where the big players in the industry say, we own 60% of the industry, or we own 100% of the industry, and we want the pot. And what I showed you earlier, the one slide, I don't think that 40% of the pot is ending up with the independent industry. I certainly don't know a lot of independent publishers who are very happy about streaming revenue. I know that the majors are selling music, as it were, wholesale on block. There is no way that we can account. There's no transparency. And that leads to a situation where we don't believe what's going on in the streaming environment. Right. May I open the floor now to a few questions? I see we have a few luminaries here today who may think that we're being too hard on the World Music Album. You, sir.
Yes, my name is Rab Bakri. I'm based in New York and Accra, Ghana. And my industry, I'm a booking agent, and I don't manage, but I deal with the modern urban African music, the music coming out of Lagos, Accra, Nairobi, Johannesburg, and Luanda, Angola. We don't deal with albums at all. It's based upon single after single after single after single, and based on YouTube streams, and that's how my artists get booked for shows on various different continents. And sometimes when they come to North America, they're forced to compile a compact disc, which is basically a compilation of their last hits, their single hits from the past 2 or 3 years. And now some of my artists that I'm working with, they're involved with major label deals with Sony Music and Universal Music. And those major labels are telling them that you have to make a new album, and they don't understand at all. So I'm in agreement with Nindir, and I'm in agreement with Scott that the album is dead. That's all.
Thank you very much. You want to answer?
No, I don't even know if it was a question, but I do want to answer. I do want to jump in, because I agree 100%. I mean, everything about the album is artificial. It already is artificial. It was, you have to think, every outlet in the music industry, you have to create content that's native to that. So if you listen to the radio, does anyone still listen to the radio? Yeah, exactly. But it still exists a little bit. I don't. But if you listen to the radio, what's native on the radio? Songs. One song, another song by different artists. You don't listen to an album at a time. If there's a gig and you put it on, what's a concert? What's native to a concert? Imagine if you only played one song at a concert and walked off stage. Thank you, good night. It wouldn't feel natural. It's not native to that. What's native to the digital world are singles. It's putting out one song at a time. If you want to ensure that nobody listens to an album, put it into Spotify. Then you're guaranteed no one will hear it, because it's an unnatural way to listen to music. What you listen to is a track at a time. If you want to be successful, think about one track this month, another track, not throw it all in, because then also you lose all your marketing opportunities. You just dumped it in there. You're done. See you in 2 years.
Interesting. Now, the question I've got to ask myself then is, why did I do an album? Despite me saying nobody wants to buy an album, why did I do an album? What I discovered is when we started doing festivals, they wanted to purchase an album. So you got to follow the audience. You got to follow your customer. When I would... I take point Scott's point. When I would approach the media for coverage, most of the world music media said, we're only interested in albums. So the world music, we're talking about world music here today. So the world music media wants album. The world music audience currently at festivals want an album. So the two main markets, which is largely festivals and gigs, and world music, they want an album. So fine. But what we discovered in our own indigenous population, they don't have albums. I've just explained to you why they don't. It's interesting. I had a conversation with a few radios and they said, don't really need your album. We only do single charts. So actually, the very market that we come from, this wasn't featured at all because they don't do albums. They've just stopped doing albums years ago. They only do single charts. So we discovered we couldn't sell this into our indigenous population. So the problem we had was we had two different markets, one very young, one, shall we say, more mature. The mature market wanted this. The young market doesn't. And we had to ask ourselves, well, we're never going to hit the young market now. We're far too old for them. And the only people that in that market, indigenous bought these, were people who were 40 and 50 who'd been following us. So this, although I don't believe in it, was construed because I followed the audience. And I understood the demographics of the audience we're currently selling to. They wanted this, exactly like the BMW. So, but if you're in a market in 20 years' time, so that's my 16-year-old now, who potentially can get into world music when he's 35, 36. Yep, so that by that stage, I'm telling you, these things won't be around.
Carolina? I come from a different environment, I guess. I'm really against the SAP culture of fast listening to everything. And I think actually our task as what we are doing is to educate, and actually also to educate in slow listening and to go deep into the thing. So if we agree with the industry and just think about the money and can we get a spot on television or whatsoever, then okay, it's dead. But I don't really care. It's like saying God is dead. It's like saying poetry is dead. And people have said that so many times. And maybe they are. But dead compared to what? Compared to my life? No. In my life, it's not dead. Not none of it. And I grew up, my father was a journalist, and we were listening to operas for 3 hours. We could sit in the sofa, the family, listening to operas, for instance. And none of my generations would ever do that. It was out of fashion in my youth, but we did it, and I appreciate it now. I'm working with younger artists who put out vinyls, and they do it because they want this time to give us some time back. In Denmark, the big fashion in food industry now is slow food, and we are winning Michelin star after Michelin star because of that people do believe in other ways of living than the fast food industry or the fast money making or just going on stage with one microphone without a backing band. So,
very quick one. I think that's fantastic, and I think we'd all love to be there, but it won't pay the bills, and it
Thank
won't
you.
Pay for the manufacture okay. of an album.
Can I intervene here? I support your attitude. I think that is the way to live. We can't go along thinking negative all the time. But when I was doing a little research for this panel, I called a couple of successful producers, and this year's third time winner from Glitterbeat Records happens to be in the audience. And I'd like to ask you, Chris, is the world music album dead for Glitterbeat?
First, I think it's not healthy to talk in these categorical black and whites, because I think what you're saying, Carolina, is exactly right. There's a lot of parallel narratives. And the music business is still complex enough that it supports things at a very DIY, handmade level, and it supports it more where Scott's coming from, big aggregation and things like that. All of this is true, and all of it is false at the same time. I think there's a lot of paths into it. I mean, we release vinyl, we release CDs, we release now cassettes. We're about to release our first cassette, actually. So, and we do streaming, and we do, all these other things, too. All of it working hand in hand. I think one thing that's really not necessarily even that unique to the world music album is that we might be in still a momentary bubble as far as this goes, but still the album is what most promotion is still geared around. You can't go to The Guardian with a single. It's not going to happen. You're not going to get a review. Maybe if you're Beyonce, it might happen. But by the way, Beyonce is making, you know, concept albums, like her new album. You know, Frank Ocean's record is the biggest story of the summer. It was dropped as an album. He spent years making it as an album. So to say something like the album is dead is just way, way, way over the top. You know, I think within the world music market, we have a very particular niche, and I think it's maybe sometimes a little bit old-fashioned, and it's probably true that maybe there is a disconnect on some levels. It would be healthier if we started to look at things like singles as being more relevant. This would be probably very healthy for the labels and the artists, but we still are in that bubble at the moment here where albums really account for the majority of the focus of promo. And, you know, we can pretend that's not true. I mean, just throwing content into streaming services is a complete dead end. I mean, there's no way that you're going to find your way out of that. There's no way anyone's going to find you or your artist there. I mean, it's just, you know, there's a lot of dead product. If you look at a very interesting graph is the amount of songs that are on streaming services that have never even been played once. I mean, it's millions and millions. So to think that just putting your stuff out digitally and hanging it up there on the wall, hoping somebody looks at it, it's a myth. It's a fantasy, actually. Well,
but also, taking that point, then not putting it there, it's a myth that the millions of people around the world are just going to magically going to find a world music CD somewhere to buy.
And actually, am I saying that? I'm absolutely saying that. I'm far from saying that. I'm saying the opposite. I'm saying you have to play all games simultaneously, including real promotion.
So what I did recently with an artist, and this is to agree with you, because again, like I'll say provocative things to get people thinking, but this is what I did with an artist, and I'm right in the middle of a campaign now, and we started it in January, and the idea was, because, you know, when you put an album out, there's some, you know, you mentioned Frank Ocean or Beyonce, but a month after the albums are out, nobody's talking about it anymore. They're on to the next thing. So we wanted to kind of stay in the cycle. So with this artist, which is kind of a mid-level artist, not a huge artist, not a baby band, just kind of a mid-level artist that's been around for a while. What we did was we came up with a campaign we called Sound of the Month. And every month, this artist writes, records, and releases a new song. So they don't know what's next month because next month hasn't happened. And so when they announced this to the audience, they said, what we'll do is we'll pre-sell you the album. So an album that hasn't been recorded, let alone written, they started selling to their fans. So in the first 8 weeks, they sold out of 1,000-piece limited edition vinyl. And they sold it for $60 each. So that's $60,000 minus 10 grand in costs for manufacturing and all that. So $50,000 profit for an album they haven't even written. Each month, they put out a new track, which means that each month they get a chance to get on Spotify playlists, main page of iTunes, get a review written. Next month, another song. Maybe it actually gets on different playlists because this is a slower song, and the last month it was a faster song. And over and over and over. At the end of 12 months, they will then, in December of this year, they'll be able to manufacture an album, and they will bundle it together and ship it out to people and ship it out to stores. And here's the thing. The moment the album is done, it's not the beginning. It marks the end of the campaign. The campaign is now over. When you get this in your hand, it was thank you, it's the end. So instead of starting with this, you finish with this. This is the big payoff at the end. Putting it out up front means almost guaranteed obscurity.
Thanks, Scott. I will take another question in a moment. I just want to react to that briefly. Something that you mentioned earlier, that once they've bought the album and they've put the money out there, they're not going to buy it again. And in the case of streaming, they may use that track more than once, in fact, several times. And so you're earning money multiple times when people are using playlists. Any other questions?
Let me say
Everyone put up their hand. Now, they can only be questions. You can't just attack me. By the way, what you said was so beautiful and romantic. I honestly, almost poetic.
Thank you very much, Harman. I'm a festival programmer from Uganda. This is just a contribution to the conversation. It's not a question. I agree with Scott. I don't listen to radio because radio is wasting my time. I can't listen to commercials forced onto me or neither watch TV. But I also have a feeling that the end conclusion or answer to this whole conversation is going to be that the world music album is dead. But I would love to say that maybe what Johan is holding over there, that album, is not, maybe it's an album meant for a different intention. As a collector, I want to consume that. Now, I'm on Spotify. I have a Spotify premium account. I listen to any album that I want as long as it's on there. And since it's a premium account, I can listen to it offline, which means I can play. Once I feel like the album, I'm tired of listening to it in my ears, I delete it, I put another one. So that means I don't have ownership of the album. But as a collector, I love that because that I'll keep even for my kids after 30, 40, 50 years, they'll land onto that album. Now, a brother that I met yesterday, he had a record, a vinyl, and I said, I love this. Can I buy it from you? He gave it to me, and I said, can you sign on it? And he said, why? And I said, this is writing history. My kids are going to land on this 30 years, and they'll say, oh, our father met this guy, and he has this. Now, you have your BMW. It has a CD player. You might wonder and say, this is for the 50-year-olds. You can tell me how old I am. I have a record player at home, and this is what I love. So maybe it is dead commercially. It is not going to bring food to the table. But for us as collectors, we want it because we want to have ownership of your music when we buy it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we'll take two more questions, and then we'll wrap it up if we can. Don't want to keep you too long.
Hello. My only concern is that, I mean, it's clear that there's a relationship between longevity of singles, right, if we are agreeing that singles are the next big thing, and quality, because we've seen what happens in pop music is that once people are pushing singles, success comes with the pressure to then stick to some kind of a formula that works, and the quality really goes down. But on the other hand, right, we are not mentioning, because I think the numbers for world music are not entirely pure, because to safeguard or to maintain quality, there's a lot of funding that is supporting world music, whether it's touring. And these are bands that have made albums and they're being funded to tour, and maybe it helps also sell. I don't think the sales figures for the world music sort of albums or singles will be pure. So I don't know how well we can say we are doing when we are not really honest about, you know, how much separate, how much is coming from, say, either philanthropic or governmental funding, as opposed to, you know, what, I mean, the measure of success for me, I mean, it's just too cloudy for me right now.
Thanks, Marcus. One question at the back there.
Ian Scott, Triple Earth and Stones. I'm coming from a position where I like the album. On two levels. One is personal. I enjoy the album. I have a personal, individual relationship with the album. The other is moral. An album gives the creative space for an artist to be able to express themselves. Okay, so we're talking about the reality of Kampf and Beethoven or whatever. We're talking about the reality of streaming. What is the album replaced with in streaming? It's replaced with playlists. And playlists, the artists, whoever's involved with them, the creative process, you then hand that over to a third party. Now, I am not comfortable with that. I would far prefer to be able, that the artist is allowed to have an extended expression. I am surprised, Scott.
No.
I am surprised that you took the position because it seemed immoral position.
Listen, you know me, you know I'm immoral. You'll see me tonight.
I don't know you're immoral.
You will see this. There is no, and yes, God is dead. But, no, hang on to the mic so you can yell at me some more. No. What was I going to say? So listen, there isn't, There's another way to look at that. If anyone, if you believe that, then I hope you have never delivered your CD to a radio station to play track three instead of beginning to end. No, no. And by the way, that's why I wanted you to keep the mic so you could keep yelling at me. So the other is that, you know, this notion of the album is very new. This artistic expression of the album, it came because of a technology. And I've been doing I've been in the music business a long time too, and I will tell you that artists didn't always love the album and still don't, because what would happen is you would finish in the studio and you go, oh, but I have another song. Oh, too fucking bad. We finished recording it, and now you are going to promote this fucking thing for the next 2 years until we can afford to do it again. And in today's world, it's much more fluid, and artists can write and record and release instead of saying, save it all up, put 12 songs on there, and then go out and sell it.
Scott, the notion, yes, of an album is new, but the notion of a 40-minute time span is not new. In other words, the ability of a human being to absorb, take in, have a beginning, a middle, and an end from one person's story, that goes back a long time, and it's ingrained, certainly in our Western classical thing, and it's ingrained in a human sort of, a human context.
I totally get that. God, I want to keep this going. They're trying to kick me out. But you should read a book by, don't read it. I'll tell you the good parts. It's by Douglas Rushkoff. It's called Present Tense. And again, it's actually not that good of a book, but he's a very smart guy and he wrote a really interesting thing. And what he talks about is exactly what you're saying, that through the history of time, we've told stories beginning, middle, and end. But we don't live in that world anymore. Now we live in a world of information coming at us, and it's more like a jigsaw puzzle, right? So if you have a jigsaw puzzle, it doesn't matter what order I put the pieces down on the table. After I put enough of them down, I can start to get a picture of what it is going to be like when it's finished. And this is the same thing with communication. If I want to start following you on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, I don't need to go back in chronological order and see everything you've ever written or said all the way up to today. I just jump in and I start to catch the flow. And it's the same thing with music and artists. I don't have to begin at the beginning and go to the end. If I see an artist tonight and I hear a song that I like, I go like, okay, I heard that. Might be out of order, out of context. Then I find another song. Little by little, I gain this picture of what they're all about. And now I've engaged with them and I've spent a lot of time with them. And time in this world means money.
I think we have to wrap it. Thank you. I want to thank our guests for coming. Thank you very much.